5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. Good to have your company once again. I've got Robin Christofferson back here with me from AbilityNet. Hello to you, Robin.
Hey, Stephen. How you doing?
I'm good. Tim Schwartz is back with us. Hey, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin.
And, of course, Tim from lifeafterblindness.com.
Correct.
I have to say it that way. I don't know why I say it that way. I just do. Get over it. no Andy this week because, quite frankly, he heard about the Apple event. He said, am I going to be needed this week? And I said, are we going to get to emails? And I said, look, to be perfectly frank with you, no, we're not. We're not going to get to emails this week. We are not because there's just so much to talk about. Now, you guys, I don't think are entirely convinced on this. Because when I said to you earlier, look, we're going to talk about the Apple event, you're like, maybe we'll bring up something, AirTags. And I'm like, look, there's exciting stuff. Why are you guys not jumping up and down? I will tell you, though, the new iMac, you can keep it. Purple iPhone, you can keep it. iPad with OLED screens, what? You can keep it. AirTags, yeah, I'll buy a 4-pack. Is that it? I think we've covered it.
Yeah, Apple TV.
Okay, then.
Don't forget that new Apple TV.
Yes, that's true. I know you're excited about that.
Yes.
Okay, that's a very short summary of the Apple event. We should maybe go.
That's it. All right. Good night, everybody. Yep.
That was it, yeah. Look, I just want to say what else is coming up in the episode, because in case you immediately think, here we go, it's all about Apple, I'm off. No, look, we've got lots more to talk about. We're going to be joined a bit later by Ben Rendell from the Technology for Life team. If you haven't yet delved into the world of Amazon Echoes, then you might want to listen to Ben's demonstration of how he uses the Amazon Echo in his life. So we'll talk a bit about that. Then there'll be a shameless plug for Robin's podcast. And then we're going to talk to Paul Beppe. Now, he is a user experience design expert at the BBC. And he's joining us not to talk about the BBC, although good old Blighty does well. But actually, we're going to be talking about Braille, the Braille Broadcasting Corporation. That's what we'll call it this week. because we are talking to Paul Beppe all about Braille displays, in particular the L Braille, which he loves. And I'm keen to know, really, guys, how powerful this thing is. What can it do? What could you use this thing for? I know the obvious answer is a lot of the office-based tasks is what people will be using it for, but can you go further with it? Could you do other tasks? Some people have. So we'll talk about that. Also, he's going to talk about the HumanWare Brilliant line. He's been having a look at the new BIX range. And we're going to talk about Orbit as well. Because a lot of people have been criticising and being, well, not criticising, but critical of Orbit for various reasons, for issues with the hardware, to some people feeling it's not coming out fast enough in the UK, although that will change because RNIB will be stocking the new Orbit Writer and the Orbit Reader 40. And I'm looking forward to getting my hands on both of those devices to let you know my views. But I have to say, I think the Braille and the Orbit Reader range, the 20 and 40, that signage quality Braille, is really good, really, really good. So, and a price point that's, I have to say, it's certainly much better for the 20. The 40 gets a bit more expensive, but you'd expect that. So we'll look forward to getting into that a bit more in detail. And I mentioned we're not doing emails this week, but that's for a reason. And you'll be pleased to hear this, I hope anyway, because next week, you're not getting one episode. Oh, no, you don't want that. You don't want one episode of Tech Talk. You want two episodes of Tech Talk. And we will, like the postman, deliver. Or woman, sexist. So, we are covering everything. I'm having a conversation myself here, I feel.
I was going to say, what's better than one episode of Tech Talk? Half an episode. No, two episodes.
Oh, come on. You might be right on that one. You might be right on that one. I couldn't possibly comment. Anyway, yes, we are going to be getting into all that. On our special episode. So just a programming note for you here. If you listen on RNIB Connect Radio, we will be broadcasting our first email special on Monday at 5 p.m. That's the bank holiday Monday at 5 p.m. And then we'll be back with our regular episode Tuesday at 1 p.m. But if you listen on podcast, Then on the Tuesday, you'll get the double bumper edition. Both episodes will be delivered Tuesday, 1 p.m. And what Andy has to do when he does that is he has to make sure he does it in such a way that the numbering's right. Otherwise, it'll all go wrong and you can blame him.
So there you go. Can we not put them together on the podcast with like an intermission bit of music in between them?
Well, see, I thought about that, right? But here's the problem. You do that, it screws up the numbering.
Okay.
So no, we're not doing that. Terrible idea, Robin. So no, we're not doing that. So yeah, the the episodes will be coming soon. We're looking forward to getting into those emails. Yeah, so again, I'll remind you of that at the end of the show, but that is where that will all lie. Right, shall we get into it then? Because it is the big news
from the internet.
It is what we've been talking about all last week. Very excited about the Apple event. It finally got here. Okay, I'm going to start with you, Tim. Under or overwhelmed by the announcements?
Well, I was just whelmed, maybe. I'm not sure.
Just whelmed, okay.
Just whelmed. No, you know what? A couple things on the Apple event itself. We talked about this when all of us got together to watch it. I wonder if they'll ever go back to a full-on live presentation or if it'll be a hybrid of all these packages that they put together and pre-produce combined with some on-stage speeches. But I don't know that we'll ever go back to a full, complete live on-stage event because the way they've done these events since the beginning of the pandemic have been fantastic. They're nice, nicely packed, you know, packaged together, and they're concise and I don't know, just really good. The production quality of what they've been doing is very good. And so the delivery is fantastic. That said, you know, is it a way to, you know, how do I say this nicely? Like putting packaging everything up in a nice, beautiful package. And it's just, as I said, just kind of whelmed.
Are you talking about the actual event, or are you talking about the announcement? Because we saw,
yes.
I've got to say, I mean, 3 minutes in, there were like three announcements right off the bat, and I was thinking, wow, this is going to be a quick hour. And for sure, there is so much more capability to cram in the announcements in a much shorter space of time. You know, that's one thing a lot of people have said about these events. They're much shorter than they used to be. Sometimes it would be an hour and a half, 2 hours. And of course, you don't have the applause in between, right, to kind of continually slow things down. But no, Robin, where were you with it? Were you whelmed, overwhelmed, underwhelmed, whelmed?
I was hugely impressed by the presentation, by the production values, by the pace, by the humour. So yeah, I was overwhelmed or kind of, no, it met my expectations because they've done a brilliant job recently there. And as far as the products are concerned, I thought they, you know, really delivered when it comes to what the products are. Maybe my underwhelmedness might be around the fact that none of them speak to me. You know, I'm not going to rush out apart from maybe the cheaper product that we're going to talk about because I can see a direct use for those, but I'm not going to buy any of the others. But that doesn't mean that they're not great products and a lot of people are very excited about them. So, yeah, I would say whelmed as well when, you know, all things considered.
Okay, well, purple is the new colour for the iPhone 12, the mini and the 12, I guess. This appealed to your wife, didn't it, Tim? This was good news to her.
I thought it would appeal to my wife. I spoke to her about it. I'm like, well, so this means that you're going to get a new iPhone 12 in purple because it's her absolute favourite colour. And then I can get your iPhone 11 and I'll just trade off my SE 2020. And she's like, yeah, but no, because see, I have a purple case on my phone, and so it's purple anyway, so why do I need to buy a new phone? I'm like, oh, drat.
Yes.
I was so close. So she likes the idea of it. She said it looks fantastic, that the purple is really mixed well on there, that they've done a really great job with it. It looks good, but she slaps a case on it anyway, so I lost that one.
She can put a really slim silicone, you know, clear gel case on it.
Yeah, I tried.
Their choice of purple.
Yeah, well. Didn't work, but that's okay. However, she she laughed at me with the AirTags announcement because we have Tile and I don't use them. So she's like, well, you don't use the Tiles. Why do you think you're going to use the Apple AirTags? I'm like, but I want them just to say I have them, I guess. I don't know. But the Apple TV, like we mentioned, is the thing that I'm most excited about. Although I have to say, when it comes to the other products, like Robin was saying, a lot of these other things didn't speak to me because I'm not a specific Mac user. I am a PC, you know, Windows user. However, the specs in, say, the iMac, for example, I was blown away. I think it is fantastic. I'm tempted. I'm probably not going to, but boy, it's tempting because it just sounds really, really good. I like the specs, and I am impressed. I'd like to see one in action.
Tim's going to get on the Apple bus. Oh, I love it.
You can always run Windows on it.
Actually, you can't. Not at the moment.
Well, we could talk about remote desktop. I think we'll say there at some point.
Well, yeah, let's save that for just now. Yeah. But look, let's talk. Maybe okay, before let's we start leave purple. Somewhere. Well, all right, okay.
Before we leave purple, that's the disability colour, though, isn't it? The purple pound, that sort of thing. Has there been any comments on social media or that you've seen around, you know?
No.
Hey, okay, fine.
No one cares.
Moving on.
But here's the thing. I mean, they care about the colour, I'm sure, but no one's attributed it, I don't think, to that.
It's
but
the colour of royalty.
Yeah. It's the colour of royalty. I suppose it is, yeah. Okay, well, look, we've got to start somewhere on this. So let's start with the iMac. So available in a range of different colours, and that's the key here. They're creating back, I think, the original design and sexiness of the iMac, going right back to those CRT monitor iMacs. Remember those ones? And that was the kind of ones that we all remember, and you know, the great Jeff Goldblum adverts that promoted it. You know, three ways to get a Mac set up, which was just to plug. What was it? It was take it out of the box, plug it in. And that's it. There's no third thing. You just, that's it. Just go. Just go. Plug it in, turn it on, and you're off. And
there's
that's
no Bondi
similar to this.
Blue.
No Bondi blue, yes. That's right. That was a colour, wasn't it? But yeah, they do lots of different colours. I mean, I must admit, I'm not the colour guy here, so I'm not going to be an expert on all these. I'll try and remember them. I know we had blue or purple, I think it was. We had green. I remember pink.
Orange, yellow.
Yeah, silver, I think,
orange
obviously.
Orange and yellow. And
no space grey.
Nope.
No space grey. So you know what that means. That's where the iMac Pro is going to be coming in, right? They're going to make the iMac Pro probably space grey.
Yeah, probably.
I think this is brilliant, the colours. I think it's bringing a lot of vibrancy to Mac products, which have always been, you know, rose gold. People flipped over rose gold because it was, or the gold sort of champagne-y one before that. But yeah, I definitely think this is because Johnny Ive has definitely left the building.
Yes,
and
you can
however
tell.
Many years ago that was, you know, these products take a while in the pipeline, and I think that's as a direct result of that. He would never have even contemplated these colours. So yeah, I think it's nice.
I think also the design as well. Johnny Ive wouldn't have touched, and it still has the chin on the front. The iMac always had that chin. Where all the components were, speakers and all the rest, and that still exists. I don't think Steve Jobs or Johnny Ive would have let that out of the front door. But, yeah, it's still got that style. It's got white on the front. This is the interesting thing, right? So all these colours, let's say you choose the pink, right? Which I think is the... I can't work out which one is the closest to red, because I thought one of them was red, but I've yet to see that option available anywhere. But even if you got the red, by all accounts, going by the reviews, you get actually a salmon pink colour on the front, because it's like a faded version of that colour on the front. So it's not... It's one of these things. This is the computer that looks better from the back than it does from the front. You know, if you looked at the back of it all the time, you'd be like, ah, and then you look at the front and go, ugh, because you get the big chin, the colour's faded, and round the screen is all white.
I would say that...
I'm not so sure that's a nice design, if I'm honest.
All the different coloured iPhones that had bezels, I mean, it's probably completely invisible, the bezel now on the front of the newer iPhones, but they depend, regardless of what the colour was, were the bezel was either white or black.
That's right, yeah.
And that's because, you know, with white, when the screen's lit up in, you know, before the days of dark mode, it just sort of blended into the thing. And with black, you know, it kind of goes the opposite way. When it's switched off, you know, it merges in with the black screen. But, you know, black or white, wasn't it? So I can see where they're coming from there. But, yeah,
well, yeah,
why,
it was
why
black
does it need
before.
Bezels at all?
Yeah. Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, that's another issue. And I think, I hope, anyway, that the new iMac Pro will not look anything like this thing. I'd like to think it would be all screen. I can't really understand why they've not managed this. They've said they've put all the gubbins of the computer, if you like, into the chin. Why couldn't they put it behind the screen and then make the screen bigger, make it full screen? I don't know. It seems a bit odd.
It's funny because it's 11 millimetres, which is the same thickness as iPhone.
No, is it not the Apple Watch, or is it the same? I know that someone said it's the same thickness as the Apple Watch. I mean, just hang on a sec. Let's just get our heads around that for a second. There's no bump anywhere. There's no bump where the components are. It's all 11 millimetres thick, and that leads us to something else. Wasn't talked about on stage, but one thing that came out was that the headphone jack, it still has a headphone jack, good news, it's on the side. And the reason for that is because the headphone jack, a standard headphone jack, is 14 millimetres in length. So it wouldn't have fitted.
You couldn't put it
in the bag because it would have poked out the front. It's just hilarious to think that this is how thin this thing is. I mean, it is an incredible feat of engineering. I'm just not entirely convinced of the style. Internally, though, we cannot deny this is going to be a powerful machine. It's got the M1 chip, which is ultimately the difference here. Also, you're getting a much higher option than you got previously on iMacs for hard drive as well. I think you can take these up to 2 terabytes internally. So that's good news, SSD. You've also got 8 gig RAM up to 16 gig RAM. Still not pushing past the 16 gig RAM yet, but that may come with the next M1 chips. 2 Thunderbolt, and I don't get my head around this at all. 2 Thunderbolt USB 4 ports and 2 USB 3 ports. If that makes any sense to anybody, then congratulations, you win a prize. I will, though, say that prize has, in fact, been stopped. We're not doing the prizes anymore. So, you know, enjoy. A gigabit internet as well. And yes, let's not forget the Magic Keyboard with Touch ID.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's pretty nice. And not available separately. Interesting, but not available separately. And if you think, oh, well, I'll just buy one of those Touch ID keyboards when they do become available, and I'll use it with my iPad Pro, won't work. Doesn't work with the iPad Pro. So, you know, just be aware of that if you were going down that route. And of course, these are all color matched as well, these products. So if you buy, if you get a red iMac, you would get a red keyboard and a red mouse to go with it. I mean, design wise, this is certainly for the design conscious. I say this is aimed at students, potentially. People who just like having a computer.
It's not pro office worker who's not kind of, you know, editing video and stuff. Wouldn't you have thought?
But you could do all that. You could do all that on it. I mean, it's capable enough.
Could, yeah. I mean, any office worker, basically, unless they're a high-end creative type. But yeah, we should also very briefly mention on the RAM numbers that you mentioned there. If anyone thinks, well, that's low for a desktop, we're not talking Intel numbers here. You know, the M1 architecture needs far less RAM to perform, you know, optimally. So, yeah, just like you don't have 32 gigs of RAM in your iPad Pro and it's grease and lightning, this is going to be the same.
1080p FaceTime HD camera. That's worth mentioning. So the camera will be improved. And decent quality microphones and a 6-speaker sound system. It's about time, frankly. Tim, from your point, I think you should buy this. I think you should just buy this thing because I think you'd love it because, you know, Jen would love it. Alyssa would love it. You would love it. Fully accessible. Good for the family. I'm selling it to you. I think this is yours. This is your product. I was in love with it when I saw it, I must admit. At first, I was like, I was jumping up and down. I was, I was actually showing my credit card to the computer, hoping that it would magically turn it into an iMac. But the problem for me is I've got a Mac Mini Basic, which I got when M1 came out. I've got my big beast of a MacBook Pro sitting there. I don't need this. I don't need it. But that doesn't mean I don't want one. Doesn't mean I probably won't get one. But I don't need it at all.
True and true. Right.
All those things are true.
Well, for me, though, see, that's where it is tempting because Jennifer and I have talked about getting a new home computer. The HP that we have is fantastic and I love it. And it still does everything that I need it to do. Oh, stop. But it was the very last model that they made before they started standard putting SSD drives in standard. So I don't have a solid state drive in it. I do have one externally, for backup. But Yeah, it's to the point where we're thinking about getting a new PC, and this announcement, wow. I was impressed with it, but I just don't know, the whole switching from PC to Mac and voiceover on the Mac, and
I'll teach you. Don't worry. We'll sort this. I mean, Robin knows teaching, some stuff about it. We'll help you.
I know most of the shortcuts. I do know them and can use them, but I don't know. It's a jump. It's kind of that, Apple to Android or back again kind of jump for me. Because, JAWS and Windows for me is just second nature. It's just natural for me.
Yeah.
But it is tempting. It really, really is, because it is a very, very nice quality, computer. So I'm impressed.
I want to talk a bit about the iPad Pro because, and just a bit about it, frankly. I mean, to be honest, this is a device which has... It just seems to be getting more and more powerful by the minute. The key announcement about the iPad Pro was that they were putting in the M1 chip. So basically the same chip that's inside your computer, inside the new iMac, inside the new range of MacBooks, and the Mac Mini is the same inside your iPad. Now, to be fair, for most of us, I think we'll not even tell the difference between one iPad and the next. I think if you're a creator... if you're using this for graphic design, if you're doing heavy video editing, even audio editing on this thing, you're going to notice it perhaps. But for most of us who just maybe go on Facebook or want to use, the iPad because it's a bigger screen, so we can see what we're doing if you've got a bit of vision, you're not going to notice a huge amount of difference. I mean, Facebook isn't going to open any faster. It's not going to,
The M1 is not for that.
No, it's not. I think, if you were going to buy an iPad today, Get one on refurb, get a certified refurbished, get something else, because this is just going too far. The screen in the iPad Pro, the big one, the 12.9, is essentially a shrunken down version of their big Pro display, which costs, ridiculous amounts of money, £5,000 or £6,000. And they've kind of shrunk this into the iPad Pro, which is incredible. They've put 5G in there. This is for creators. This isn't for Facebook. It's brilliant. It's going to be great. The screen, if you do have low vision and you want the best screen you can get, this is it, I think. Other, providers are available, but... I think this would probably be all of that. But would any of us want this? Really? I don't think so.
Not for anything that I currently do.
No.
No, I've got a lovely iPad Pro, but
and you will notice a modicum of difference between these two.
Well, the main difference, I think, between the M1 and the A series, because some people might be saying, well, hang on a minute, I thought the A's were all about, iPads and iPhones and stuff like that. So why are they bringing a desktop chip that was based on the A series anyway back into their mobile devices? Well, the M1, it was based on an A14 or 13, or actually I can't remember now. But anyway, it was based on that architecture.
It's A14, I think, wasn't it?
I think so. But yeah, it had a bunch of extra I/O because a desktop needs more ports. And so far, the iPad has always just had one. Mm. It needs different kinds of I/O. It needs to be able to support Thunderbolt. It needs to potentially have the ability to have an external GPU. It's got a lot of other requirements, and I think that's why they've brought it to the iPad, because it then allows for much more potential expansion a la a full desktop device back into their Pro iPads.
So I don't think my listeners are buying this. I don't think that. I'm just putting it out there. I don't think we're going to buy this. That's my take on it. And you know what else that really irks me about this thing? I read this and it kind of annoyed me, and I don't even have one of these, and I was thinking this would irritate me. If you buy the new one and you've got a case for it, the keyboard case with the trackpad on it, the previous version won't work. You've got to buy the new one. And I think that's a bit cheeky, isn't it? They haven't even changed the design, and yet, well, at least I don't think they have, but it doesn't work. Doesn't do it at all. So you'd have to go and buy a new keyboard case for this, which I think is a bit cheeky. But the new one does have something rather nice, which is USB-C pass-through, meaning you can charge it without having to have a power connector straight into the iPad. Meaning,
that's
of course,
difference.
You can use it with the Thunderbolt. Yeah, I know, but it's like, really? You couldn't just make it backwards compatible with that one thing?
Well, I think you're talking from the position of somebody who buys those kind of pro-end devices on a maybe two-year cadence, whereas, you know, they're not expecting people who bought one of those iPad Pros with the, you know, the keyboard that you're talking about to update it so soon, maybe. So,
I don't know. That's a scam. here's my take on this. I think that the Apple TV is great if you've got better vision and you can get the benefit of the big screen. The power, though, I don't think you need that level of power for most basic tasks. If you're going to get into some serious, if you've got the vision for it, some serious visual work, then great. But that's kind of where I'm at. Anyway, let's talk about Apple TV, because I know this is something that Tim is very excited about. Why are you excited about the new Apple TV 4K, Tim?
Well, I will say that I would have been more excited if it had had more hard drive space than it does. I know the previous 4K also had 32 gig and 64 gig options. And I wanted to get it because we have the, I think the second generation or whatever it is, that's still just got 32 gigs, and we need a lot more space in ours. Up to 64 is great, but I wasn't going to buy the older model knowing that eventually, probably very soon, sooner than later, they were going to come out with a new one that would hopefully have at least 64. I was really hoping for that 128, though. Mm-hmm. But
do you want those photo caching and game saves? What do you need the storage for?
Well, not for photo caching, but for games, absolutely. I mean, we have, you know, all of our music's in the cloud and all that kind of thing. So we're streaming those, we're streaming TV shows and things like that. But it is for the gaming, because in our household, it has become a primary gaming device. And with Apple Arcade and a lot of other apps that you can download to it with controller support and things like that, it is a fantastic gaming device, and it's the quality that it is and the speeds that it's at now. I mean, they're running console style games on the newer 4K, the last 4K model, I should say. This one I could absolutely see easily, you know, running, those kind of console type games on the Apple TV. Now, I'm not playing those, obviously. My daughter is. But that said, it is something that we definitely need in our household. And I just need that extra hard drive space, because between all my apps, my wife's apps, and then all of our daughter's, you know, games and other, you know, various apps, I just need more space. You know, like I said, I could have gotten that with the previous 4K model, but this one has updated sound. It's got the old Dolby Atmos in it. The screen quality, you know, from what they've updated for my wife and my daughter, at least they can see it, it's going to be fantastic, you know, at the 4K level. And we just bought last year a brand new 4K television. So, you know, we'll finally be able to actually take advantage of that. So yeah, it's not like an impressed kind of thing. It's not like, oh my gosh, this Apple TV just blows all the other ones away. I mean, it does, but I'm just happy to have a new one with more space, more bells and whistles, faster, better, and can get me a more versatile use out of it. Plus, we can then take the old Apple TV that we've got and put it in the bedroom or another room and actually have control in more than one room, because we are cutting the cord in this house. We are slowly moving away from having our typical satellite service to just streaming everything. And this will be a help to us to be able to have it in more than one room.
It's interesting. So I didn't realize this at the time, but because there's a new remote control that's coming with this, which a lot of people will be pleased about, especially us blind folk. This is good news. I'm excited by this, because the remote control currently for that device is horrible. But this new one has a kind of circular, instead of the whole thing being a touchpad at the top, it's now a circular, very kind of almost back to the original style of the Apple remote. The kind of long, thin design, silver and black for the buttons. Good contrast in those buttons as well. But yeah, a much thicker device. They put the Siri voice remote part on the side, the button on the side, which is kind of cool.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
They streamlined it from the newer iPhones, because the button is on the side. So that makes more sense.
But here's an interesting thing. So the remote control itself is available separately. You can buy it separately. £55 for the remote control. £55. Are you kidding me? Okay, so there's that. But then, aside that, something else I didn't notice.
If you'd said £155, to be honest, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Well, it is Apple.
Just saying.
I know. Apple TV 4K, though, I didn't realise that they were going to upgrade the other one. So they've actually upgraded the Apple TV HD, as they're calling it. I think that's a new name for that. But they're calling it the Apple TV HD, which doesn't have the 4K, doesn't have the A12 chip that's inside the new one. And it's coming in a 32 gigabyte option for $139, or you can get the 169. Sorry, the 32 gig for $139, which is kind of interesting. I think that's right. Oh, no, I'm talking rubbish. $169 is what you pay for the 32 gig 4K version, and $189 for the 64 gig. Nothing beyond that. But yeah,
are you
some interesting
mention
products.
The most revolutionary thing about it, the colour correction.
No. So, there we go. We will come back to this. I promise. But look, we're short of time, so I want to move on because we've got lots to talk about on the show, and I'm sure plenty of other things. You know, you can always check these details out and all these wonderful things. But yeah, here on Tech Talk, we're back on focusing about the Amazon Echo now because, the Amazon Echo, it's a great device, and sometimes we forget how great it is and how simple it is. Ben Rendell's here from the Technology for Life team to explain how he chooses to use it.
Hi everyone, Ben here from the Technology for Life team. Today I wanted to give you a quick overview of some of the simple and easy things that you can do with your Amazon Echo. Now we all use them day to day, but I think we just forget some of the simple things that they can do that make our life just a little bit easier, even as simple as checking something like the weather. What's the weather like today?
Right now in Worcester, it's 10 degrees Celsius with cloudy skies. Today's forecast is clouds and showers, with a high of 13 degrees and a low of 8 degrees.
Ah, rain, not so good, but useful information to know. Another simple thing you can do is setting up what we call a voice routine. This is a bit like setting up a shortcut, and you can say something like get ready or get the day started, and it will do several different things for you. So for example, if we wanted to get up in the morning and say to it get ready, and for it to check the weather and then play RNIB Connect Radio, for example, we can do that. So let's try that now. When I say get ready, check the weather and play RNIB Connect Radio from TuneIn.
Great. I created your routine. When you say get ready, first I will give you the weather forecasts and then I will play your music. Change it any time in the routine section of the Alexa app.
So as she says, if you want to edit that or add anything to it, you can do so by going to the app on your smartphone or tablet, or even through the website. So let's try it. Get ready.
Right now in Worcester, it's 10 degrees Celsius with cloudy skies. Today's forecast is clouds and showers, with a high of 13 degrees and a low of 8 degrees.
ITV. At 6:45 p.m. Airmadale, and at 7:15 p.m. World Cup Live.
Stop. There you go, playing the TV guide there. Another useful thing you can hear on RNIB Connect Radio. You can use it to manage lists, so if you wanted to create a shopping list, or just a reminder of things. So I've got some random things on my shopping list, but let's add something to it. Add bananas, apples, and oranges to my shopping list.
I have added bananas, apples, and oranges to your shopping list.
What's on my shopping list?
You have 10 items on your shopping list. Here are the 5 most recent: oranges, apples, bananas, milk, and black pepper. Would you like to hear your last 5 items?
No.
Okay.
There we go. And lastly, let's see if we can set a reminder. They're quite useful. I forget to do things all the time, and I find the reminders on here very useful. So let's set a reminder for me to send this recording to Stephen. Remind me at 3 p.m. to send Tech Talk recording.
Okay, I'll remind you at 3 p.m. By the way, when your reminder rings, you can snooze it by saying, remind me again in 15 minutes.
There you go, some simple things that you can do with your Echo. Hope you found it useful. If you would like more information or to contact the Technology for Life team, you can do so 03 03 123 9999, or email tfl@rnib.org.uk. We also have lots of useful resources on our website, rnib.org.uk/technology.
Thanks, Ben, and more coming soon from the Technology for Life team. Don't forget, if you're a fan of The Echo, you can check out Robin's dot-to-dot podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Now, let's turn to Braille, a big topic for us here on the show, especially in the last couple of years as I've started to delve into this world myself. With me now to discuss the latest in Braille technology is Paul Beppe, who works at the BBC. He's a huge Braille fan. Good to have you here, Paul.
Hello.
Nice to have you on Tech Talk. And, you know, it's lovely to talk Braille, Paul, because, you know, often we get people on and they talk about Braille and then they we kind of get into the whole discussion about the future of Braille. And I actually wanted to get right past all that because I think we can all just, can we just agree at this point that Braille is here to stay and the technology is proving that. And that's what we want to talk about today. Now, I wanted to talk to you specifically about the L Braille because I've seen a lot of people online. And here at RNIB, we've been getting a lot of questions about the L Braille. How good is it as a productive machine? Maybe it'd be helpful to start off by explaining what the L Braille actually is for people who don't know.
Yeah, okay. So basically, in its simplest term, the L Braille is like a Windows 10 box without a screen. But you can obviously connect it to a monitor with an HDMI cable, and it enables you to sort of like dock a Braille display into the front of it. So, you know, your Braille display becomes your primary sort of like input device. And it runs a vanilla Windows 10. So it's not, you know, it's not, say, for example, like a rehash of the PacMate that was, you know, ran, I think it was like Windows SE or Windows Mobile or whatever it was. This thing is literally a vanilla Windows 10 box. So it runs, you know, your standard Office apps, internet browsers, you know, kind of like, you know, Zoom, Teams, whatever. You know, you can do all of this stuff on there, which is, you know, I have to admit, I was kind of a bit skeptical when I first looked at it. I'm like, well, hang on, can it do this? And then I used one for about sort of 2 or 3 months, and then I got one funded. And, you know, for me, I really like it. I mean, it gives me everything that I need, you know, to kind of like do, you know, kind of like my Windows stuff on. But, you know, with the added advantage that I don't get any screen glare because so if I'm in front of a monitor all day, my eye condition sort of for one reason or another, if I'm sitting kind of like exposed, you know, to like the light of a monitor all day, it gets quite painful. So, I mean, the L Braille, I really like the L Braille. I mean, you know, the only thing that I haven't done on it is kind of like audio editing. And
the thing for me, though, Paul, is, you know, it's interesting you said at the beginning you were skeptical because I was skeptical too. I think often when you hear about these specialist versions of these devices, they never tend to have much power behind them. So, yeah, maybe okay for the odd office task or whatever, but if you do need to do anything more productive than that, are they capable?
I mean, I think it would be. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, it's got sort of like standard USB ports and stuff like that. So, you know, you could bang like a standard keyboard on it and things like that. And you know, would I want to audio edit using a Braille display? No. Mm. I mean, it don't get me wrong. It's possible because, you know, you can achieve all of your sort of Windows shortcuts and most application shortcuts by sort of like using your various Braille cords or combinations, whatever you want to call them. Would I want to do that? No. But yeah, you know, you can connect to, you know, like a standard keyboard to it, or a mouse or do whatever, kind of, you know, achieve literally everything that you would on a mainstream device.
So you're impressed.
I am actually. I mean, I said at the beginning, I was skeptical and I've always had a bit of a love hate relationship with sort of like Freedom or VFO. And to be honest, I haven't particularly, I wouldn't say that I've been a fan of most of their products, but, you know, credit where credit's due and all that. With the L Braille, I do think that they've actually pulled it off, you know, and they've done, you know, have actually come up with a really good device.
Can I just add, I mean, this is going to sound like a really stupid question, but I've never touched the L Braille. I've got the Focus 14.
Yeah.
Does the L Braille give you portability or does it have to be plugged in at a desk?
No, it's portability. So it's basically like a laptop. It's got like an internal battery. It charges via USB-C. So, you know, you can sort of, it does come with obviously its own charger, but I mean, if you know, you can a sort of like a high voltage, anchor charger or something like that. Portability. I mean, it's a bit. I guess it's a tad weighty, but then, you know, it's got a Braille display strapped to it, so you know, it's not going to be light. But you know, it still fits in a backpack. You know, you can put it in, I don't know, briefcase or whatever you use. I have to admit, I do really like it.
And is it the 40 cell you've got?
Yeah, it's the 40. So it comes with the latest generation of the Focus, which is that's the sort of aluminium display, which, you know, that in itself is better. And then, you know, what you can do is obviously you can undock it from the box. You can use, if you're going into a meeting, you can basically write your meeting notes on scratch pad or what, which is, you know, the Focus is sort of version of a kind of like a simple text editor. Come back, dock your Braille display back into your L Braille, and then, you know, you can import the text directly into sort of like Word or Notepad or, you know, whatever Windows application you're using. I'm really impressed with it. I like it a lot. Would totally recommend it.
Okay. Now, I know you're a fan of other devices as well, and in your role, and I know over the years you've been using lots of different ones. You've mentioned other companies. Talk about Humanware. Obviously, they've come up with some new products, some quite innovative products.
Honestly, those guys have properly, you know, they've really pulled it out of the bag with, I mean, I've always been a fan of Humanware displays. I think, you know, to be fair, I've been a fan of a lot of Braille displays over the years. I mean, I absolutely loved, you know, the Vario display. You know, they were the ones that were manufactured by Baum, who kind of like sadly went to the wall back in, was it like 2016 or 17? And you know, at the time, those displays were literally at the top of their game. You know, they had, you know, like a word processor, they had a file manager, Excel viewer, PDF viewer, all of that jazz. So, you know, it had internal storage. So, you know, this thing was literally, if you didn't want speech in a meeting, you could just take this in and do what you needed to do. I mean, I've still got one now. I absolutely love it to pieces, but you know, it's no longer really supportable because obviously they went bankrupt. But yeah, the Humanware displays, the, you know, the Mantis and the, you know, the Brilliant 20 or 40X, you know, whichever, absolutely amazing devices. I mean, I've got the Mantis, which for people who don't know it, it's like a Braille display. And a note taker with a QWERTY keyboard. Amazing device. It's got like a text editor, file manager. But interestingly, it's the first, you know, what they're calling intelligent Braille display, you know, or a smart display or whatever, which has got Wi-Fi access. And it, you know, it's got, it kind of like integrates with platforms such as, you know, Bookshare, NFB, and I think it's Bard. So, you know, I mean, if you've got like a Bookshare account, you can sort of like log in, and, you know, this is, I find this like really sort of handy, as not only as a parent, but also, you know, like as a professional working in UX and accessibility, I can literally go on, do a sort of like a search for a title, download it, and then I can, you know, I don't know, sit in my house, obviously not on the train at the moment because of lockdowns and stuff like that. And, you know, I can just like literally read my book from my display, or, you know, then I can sort of like use it on my phone, my laptop. It's a really, really lovely display. It's a really good piece of kit. It's one of the, I'd go as far to say that it's probably the best that I've seen in a good few years.
I will say, you know, I got the chance to try out the Mantis Q40 at the time when it was just being launched by Humanware here in the UK. And I've got to say, I fell in love with it. I love the fact that it's QWERTY input.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I'm quick at Braille because obviously, you know, learning Braille from an early age at school and sort of stuff like that. But, you know, I don't really want to take, not that I'm doing meetings in person at the moment, but, you know, I don't want to sit there with a Braille input device. I'd rather just sit there with a standard keyboard on the desk and, you know, just read my Braille from, you know, my line of Braille cells. It's a really, really good device. I mean, it's literally my kind of like go-to device at the moment. That and the L-Braille.
Have you had much time with the BI range, the new range of brilliant displays, the 20, the 40X?
I have actually. I like the Mantis, I like the two displays, you know, they've got literally the same functionality. I think the X range have also got, like Victor Reader. And they've got, interestingly, they've got an audio sort of like headphone jack. So I don't know what the future plans for that are.
Well, the rumours are that they're going to allow you to be able to listen to content. Yeah. So that Victor Reader content you'll actually be able to listen to. I was kind of hoping it would allow some audio feedback from your device, but I'm not entirely sure if that's something that will come.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'd quite like speech as kind of like a configurable component if that's possible, because there are some times that you need that bit of speech as a backup. Say for example, if you're putting like a password in and you're writing in computer braille or something like I have to say I kind of know computer braille, and I will use it to kind of like put login details in and stuff like that. But there's that odd time where you're like, hang on, what's that? Because obviously if you're putting in your email address in computer braille, full stop is kind of like .46. And then, you've got, there are some times that you just need that extra bit of feedback. Say like for, like an @ or whatever, that, there are times where that additional bit of speech feedback would be really helpful. I'm not saying that I would want it all the time, but I'd quite like the ability to switch it on as and when, really, and then sort of switch it off again. So but again, it's the first display that's actually come with that audio sort of jack and volume control, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with that, because I think it's got a huge potential.
Can I ask you about Orbit, because they're the kind of new players in town. R&IB are just about to start selling the new Orbit Reader 40, the 40 cell version. It's the 20 has been around for a while, obviously 20 plus is out, the Orbit Writer's coming soon, so there's lots in the range now. Where do you stand on that? Because a lot of people in employment tend to lean towards HumanWare, tend to lean towards Freedom Scientific for Braille displays, and other companies, HIMS as well. But where do you think these devices stand, and do they stand up next to these other devices?
So I'm going to start by saying, I know there's been a lot of criticism from sort of like various people about Orbitz and stuff like that. But I think, so my take on it is that any device that kind of like enables or raises the profile of Braille literacy can only be a good thing. So I'm going to say that I think the R&IB have done a really good job in actually bringing an affordable display to the market, because let's face it, not everybody's got access to funds to get sort of HumanWare or VFO Freedom displays or even HIMS displays or whatever. So absolutely top draw, top job from the R&IB for actually doing that. I like the Orbit. I've read on one a few times. I think I don't know if I would use it in an employment environment. I like the Braille cells. They're quite sturdy, and I know that some people do like them, some people don't like them, but I like the fact that they are there, and they don't kind of like go, they're not as spongy as sort of some other displays. I think for me, the one slightly negative point for me is the noise, because they're quite loud when they refresh.
I couldn't use it in the studio. I just found it quite difficult to handle the noise.
I'm trying to put this as kind of like, for anybody who knows me, anybody who knows me will know that I'm not. I don't do tact very easily.
Look, Paul, I want you to be honest, right? Because it's your view. You're welcome to your opinion here.
Yeah, absolutely. I like them. I think they're a really good display. I think if they were a bit quieter, then they would definitely have sort of, maybe a bigger place in the sort of, the employment area. Yeah, I know that a lot of people are using them in schools and things like that. And I do think, you know, I do think they're a really good display. So, yeah. And the one thing that I do like about them is, you know, that, you know, you guys send them out and they've got a huge amount of resources on the SD card. If, you know, you're signed up to the, I think it's the RNIB, sort of, is it the book library?
That's right, yeah.
You know, there's a huge amount of material on there. I mean, you know, you've got everything from, you know, kind of like children's fiction to sort of like, you know, cookery books, sort of food recipes, you know, the whole lot is there. God, I've just done RNIB a plug.
You have, wow. Yeah, well done. Didn't do my job for me, it's great. But can I just say as well, I mean, I think that for me, you know, going through these different displays as I have, pretty much, you know, on surface level, I would say that I think the Orbit Reader is a brilliant example of something for people at home. Leisure reading, and kids, arguably as well.
Definitely.
I think that's where maybe that is. And I think that's the key, right? It's not that it's choice. That's the point. There is a lot of choice out there now.
Yeah, there is. And it's, you know, I mean, it's really good. I mean, I remember, so I went through a bit of a period where I obviously read Braille at school, and then I left school, you know, did college, uni, and all the rest of it. And I sort of, I sort of did this sort of 360, and I was like, no, I'm not going to use Braille. I'm just going to use speech, you know. So I was using like early versions of JAWS and sort of like Window Bridge and stuff like that. And then I got back into Braille, but I don't think I got into it as big, you know, in as big a way as I have. Firstly, until I started working at the Beeb, but I would say probably not really until sort of like Phoebe was born. And then, you know, you've got this whole sort of thing about, you know, I'm a parent, I want to read to my child. So that was when I kind of started using things like Bookshare, Clear Vision, and actually sort of getting a load of those sort of, you know, children's books or whatever, just so that I, you know, I could do that sort of daddy thing and, you know, read to her sort of when she went to sleep, you know, when she went to bed at night and stuff like that. And then I sort of got into it, you know, in a leisure thing for myself. And, you know, I'm quite happy just to sit there, you know, watch TV. I mean, I generally fall asleep in front of the TV. I am that guy.
Oh, yeah,
just sits
me
on
too.
The sofa, puts the telly on and just literally, that's it, I'm gone in like 10 minutes. And you know, my
it's an
my
age thing, Paul. We all get there.
Yeah, yeah, it's just kind of like, you know, I've got I'm going to end up with like no hair, no teeth, and just like sitting there, you know.
It's a beautiful like, image.
Thanks. Yeah. But it's sort of, you know, my concentration rate for TV is just absolutely atrocious. So, you know, I'm more than happy just to sit there, read a book, you know, on sort of whatever display I'm using at the time. And it, I don't know, it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we need to embrace Braille, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm sick of these people saying, you know, Braille's dated. No, Braille's not dated. I mean, would you sort of say to a sighted person, you know, that print is dated? And, you know, this whole thing about people sort of thinking it's acceptable to give, I don't know, like a primary school pupil a screen reader with no access to Braille, that's not, you know, in my opinion, that's not an acceptable substitute. I mean, you know, my 7-year-old reads Braille and she's not even VI.
And we have to promote as well that children of all, I mean, I think if a child is classed as visually impaired, I think they should still be taught Braille, irrespective
absolutely,
of whether or not
they
can see something or not. Because I think, you know, I remember from my days at school, and it doesn't seem things have changed that much. In fact, if anything, it's got worse, that children are not given the opportunity to learn. I wasn't given it. I was told, no, you've got enough vision. You can just get by with large print or large text.
Yeah.
And that actually, that didn't help me growing up. And I didn't read, as a kid, what did I know, right? All I want to do is go out and play. But later in life, I realised the benefits and actually the not only educational benefits but the employment opportunities that could have opened up to me. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you learn Braille you'll be a lawyer or you'll become an accountant, but it does help you if you decide to go into those areas. It gives you more
scope.
Let's say for example
you know, you want to get into, like, you know, the broadcast industry, you know, whether it's TV or radio or whatever, and you know, say you're doing something and, you know, you've got like an auto cue or whatever, you're not going to be able to do that with just, or it's going to be a lot more difficult with just speech. I mean, it, it can be done, but you know, the ability to be able to sort of like read from that auto cue in Braille, it just makes things so much easier because you haven't, you know, you haven't got that constant, you know, you're not waiting for, let's say, for example, NVDA, JAWS or VoiceOver to kind of catch up. You can sort of pan the Braille at your own speed. And, you know, if you're in an interview or whatever, you know, you've got, you know, you're asking people questions and writing notes. You know, do you want to be, I mean, I've interviewed people sort of, you know, for jobs and stuff. And one of the things for me is I need that complete engagement. So I don't want to be that guy that's sitting there with, you know, headphones in, whether they're kind of like, I don't know, AirPods or whatever, or sort of some sort of earbud. I don't want to be plugged into a screen reader. I just want sort of something that I can, you know, read my question, you know, write my notes, and, you know, I haven't got that dependency on speech. So, you know, there are so many things that where Braille comes into its own. I mean, you know, even, you know, like shopping lists and stuff like that. I'm quite sort of, sometimes I'll write a list on my phone, or, you know, sometimes I'll write a list on, say, like a 20 cell Braille display and take it with me and, you know, walk around the shop and, you know, oh yeah, can we get this? Can we get that? You know, it's just, there are so many things where, you know, you use Braille in sort of, or I do, use Braille in sort of like everyday life. I am really, really massively passionate about Braille. I mean, I use like Braille screen input on my iPhone. again, because if I'm writing an email on my phone, I'd rather just write out in, you know, using a Braille keyboard, because, you know, that was the way that I was taught to primarily write at school. And I guess you go back to what you know, I guess.
Paul, it's been great talking to you. And, you know, I really enjoyed geeking out a bit with you here on Braille displays, because we don't really talk enough, I think, about the actual hardware. And
I think we do,
it's great.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's really
definitely.
Great.
Yeah, totally.
Listen, thanks again for coming on and, you know, promoting as you do. And, you know, opinion is always welcome here. We will never
definitely.
Stop opinion on Tech Talk, I promise you. Paul, good to have you on.
Hey, cool. Thanks very much.
And that's it for our show this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Robin and Tim, thank you guys. I'm sorry you didn't get a word in edgeways on the Braille conversation there, but to be honest, I didn't think YouTube would want to say anything, quite frankly, about Braille.
Great job.
Yeah, well, Paul did a fantastic job going through all that kit, didn't he? Listen, that's it for our show this week. Don't forget, we have two special shows for you next week. The Bank Holiday Monday, 5 p.m. Tune in on RNIB Connect Radio. We'll bring you episode one of our email special. Episode two will be on Tuesday in its regular slot of 1 p.m. And, of course, the whole thing on the podcast. Guys, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.